Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about nutrient removal. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at some combine yield-saving adjustments you can make as you get into harvest. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the history of the Bray P soil test. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. It's a double winning week.
Football's back.
Beat the Lions on Sunday, beat the Commanders last night.
So it's a victory Monday and a victory Friday.
Yeah. It's a good week.
Matt, you got to sell beer at the game. How was it? Is it fun to sell beer at the game?
Do you feel like I was a little nervous because I've never done it before. Like, thought, oh, we're gonna get like slammed. It's gonna be terrible. Really, wasn't too bad. I did have to chase one person down because they like tried to tap.
Oh, like the card. Was that a new move you had?
And it didn't it didn't process. And they were really good. They came right back, but it was just kind of funny. Like, because you're busy, so you're like kind of watching to make sure the credit card thing clears. You give them the thing, but sometimes, you know, this particular couple had ordered like 5 waters and like 2 other things. Like, so they had a lot of stuff. So I had piled some stuff up, and oh, it was hot chocolates because we had hot chocolate last night for the really cold weather. Not sure about that.
They were coming from the south. It was a Milwaukee game.
Yeah, it was Milwaukee.
It was a little colder up north for them.
Right. But, and I make the hot chocolates and then gave them those, and all of a sudden it was like, oh no, it didn't like process. So then they weren't real far away, but I looked.
Did you go around? Like, you literally.
Oh, you had to like go around and go get
did
them.
You did you have to.
I said, ma'am. Yeah. And they were real good about it. They came back, and yeah, she had tried to tap on the like screen.
Sure.
A little tap thing.
I do feel like an idiot. I've gotten corrected more than once lately. Well,
there's so many different.
Right. Like, oh, you got to tap here.
Quick Trip, it's a screen.
Yeah. And some of them, it's like this top part. Yeah. You kind of look for where those 4 or 5 lights are.
The ones at this kiosk were like the little top thing that bumped out from the screen. Yeah. So, yeah.
You got to put a little thing in there that says tap here, you know, like on that bump out.
Well, it has like that symbol, you know, the little
hand.
I don't even know what it's, what you call it, the. Little
antenna
broadcast thing.
Yeah.
Satellite. Well,
and we went from like swiping, which you kind of there was times where
some people still do because I had a couple people like run the mag strip. Yeah.
Okay. Most and then, people were then it was the insert the chip part, and then now it's
the worst is like the phones because they're trying to tap with their phone.
Oh, yeah.
And that it worked fine most of the time, but there are a couple people like that. You know, it's and it. I think it was halftime, like the drum line must have been like right below us. It was so loud. You could, like, you're trying to talk to people, and so you can't hear the beat.
Line, yeah.
You can't hear the beeps or any of that kind of
sure,
stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
So, like, they're sitting there, like, trying to, like, tap their phone and
the Tundra line.
Tapped it like 3 times.
And you're, like, watching the screen because on my screen, it'll tell you, like, if it processed or not. And then you're, like, just yelling at each other, like, no, try it again. Like, gets a little ridiculous, but no, it was, we were like the perfect amount of busy, I would say, like never like super, super slammed because there's honestly, I knew, but didn't know how many places there are to buy beer around Lambeau.
There's a lot.
Like
yes,
within probably 50 feet, there's 3 different things, you know? So
you walk out into the concourse part, it's just like immediately beer stations. Yeah. And then they're
the hard things to find are the mixed drinks, Bloody Marys, and apparently hot chocolate, because we were one of them.
And you said you had hot chocolate.
Yeah, one of only like 6 places that had hot chocolate. Okay. So,
and I don't, for most of our listeners may not know, is most of those places selling food are volunteers, and they're doing it for...
Yeah, this was fundraising that I was there for.
Yeah, fundraising for a group, so that, which is neat, because so like basically all the tips...
Right, you're working for tips.
...go to this group and...
So I know it seems like a lot because you're $15 beer to add a tip, but you know it's for a good cause. It's at least not going to the Packers, I guess. Whether that's positive or negative for you, but
they already took their big.
They have their chunk.
So do you have any idea what ended up at the end of the night? Like,
I don't.
They don't give you.
I was going to ask the guy that set it up, which is your brother Nick, if they get any kind of like report, because the guy I worked with had done a preseason game and he said they didn't really sell a lot then.
Okay.
But we sold all the Miller Lite in our cooler and like almost all these Happy Thursdays.
Yep.
Which I've never had one, never had
seltzer, right?
It's not a seltzer, it's not fizzy.
Okay.
It's more like a wine cooler type thing, but it's like a strawberry flavored.
It was Thursday.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. But we sold almost out of those. So I mean we sold quite a bit.
How many did you drink?
Not allowed to drink on the job.
Oh.
So I didn't sell myself any beer. But
and then do you, at like third quarter at the end like
the guy so they like a manager guy that comes around and like tells you stuff
shuts you down
and he's like he came over with probably 6 minutes left in the third quarter. He's like, when the clock hits zero, you're done.
Okay,
like shut off the cooler, shut off the lights.
So like even between third and fourth quarter, are you?
As soon as the third quarter is done, that's it.
Really?
Yep.
That's good to know that.
Did you leave or did you go watch?
Well, we got to clean up and stuff. I did leave. I think there were 4 minutes left.
Well, that's nice. So you can get it out before the traffic and stuff.
Well, and with the Milwaukee game, what's nice is the way I went out, I don't think a lot of people are going that way. They're all going to the highway.
Right.
So it made it a little bit easier. But yeah, I still had like probably 3-4 different people come with the lights off, coolers off, like asking for beer. The one guy,
please, can I have some beer?
It was hilarious because he was drunk.
Really?
And he came up and he's like,
beer?
He just didn't say hi. It was just like, 2 Miller Lights. I said, I'm sorry, sir, we're closed. And he apparently thought I didn't hear him. So he says, 2 Miller Lights. And I said, sir, we're closed. I can't sell you any Miller Light. And the third time, 2 Miller Lights. And then finally, like, wait, you're closed? Oh, shit. And then he finally left. But it was just like, we had to have the same conversation 3 times before it stuck. But
Is there still some stations open? Or is it like all...
Well,
is the food closed?
Philip that works with us, he said the first snap of the fourth quarter is what they go by. So, but either way, it's not much past.
Like, right.
If you don't get what you... And you know, you can tell the people that know it.
Right.
Because a guy like came jogging up to ours with probably a minute and a half left. And we didn't have Coors Light. We only had Miller Light. But the next kiosk down had Coors Light.
So he ran over there.
Did he
and I knew that.
Coors
and
or did he?
Oh, yeah. He ran for the Coors.
He did. He just wondered.
He was like a silver bullet.
Yes.
And then I had one guy come up and ask if we were open yet. And I looked over at the clock. I'm like, yep, for another minute and 20 seconds. Which, you know, I said the guy came at like 6 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever it was, left in the third quarter. That's still like 20 minutes by the time you get TV timeouts and stuff. Like, so you're kind of watching the clock, but not really. And so, yeah, it was just kind of funny.
I wonder if is that they just don't feel like there's enough people that come at the fourth quarter. Or it's just like the seventh inning. You just got to shut these people down.
I think it's like bar time. Well, like,
it's cutting you off.
Yes. Like this guy that wants 2 more Miller Lights doesn't need
you. Oh, yeah. No, they're...
It's trying to sober you up.
Like you got to do like this online training for and all this stuff for it. And they basically tell you if they're stumbling and like you're not even supposed to serve them regardless of what time it is. And there are probably a couple people riding that line toward the end, but they were...
You made them, sir, can you walk this?
Yes.
Can you walk in front of me, sir? I would like to check your...
The first sale I made of the night.
The first sale?
Some people do come in pretty fast.
Right.
But this guy was like the alcohol compliance guy, walked up and was like starting to talk to us, and a guy came up to buy a beer.
It's a test at this point, yes.
Because the other thing is they tell you to card anyone who looks under 40.
Okay.
So I'm 41, so basically anyone who looks my age or younger is supposed to card. And the manager guy was like, card everybody. Like, just save yourself the trouble, just ask everybody. So I would say 90-95% of the people I carded, unless they were like obviously older. And, you know, a couple of people that appreciated being
carded. They take it as a compliment in general.
Yeah.
But nobody really argued it too bad. But yeah, the compliance guy's there, so I made sure to check that guy's ID. And I kind of even said something to him, like, yeah, this guy's our like alcohol compliance guy. I got to dot all my I's, cross the T's, you know. And I would say most people were good with it. I only had one or two, like, really? You got to see my, like, And you can only sell two alcoholic beverages per ID. And I had one lady that had an issue with that, too.
That's pretty normal at a lot of places.
Everywhere, yeah.
Because she wanted a seltzer and two beers. And I said, well, it's just you. I can only sell one per ID. And she's like, oh. So then she just did the two beers. And she goes, as soon as her transaction was done, okay, can I get a seltzer? It's like, ma'am, I literally just sold you two beers.
At least walk somewhere.
Right, I can't do it. She's like, well, how long do I have to be gone like to get one? I'm like, well, if you leave and I can't see what you bought anymore, then I guess I could probably sell you another one or whatever. So then she just took the two beers because there's like a little shelf, but it's clear plastic. You can see through it. Like, put the beers down out of my immediate eyesight and said, can I have a Vizzy? So she was not going to let it go. Yeah. We went back and forth for a little bit there. But yeah,
how many tried to pay with cash? Because it's all cashless now.
Yeah, three or four people.
It's been that for a little while. That I can't imagine.
It was probably more the Commanders fans, or I was surprised how many, because you check IDs, how many out of state. We I had a bunch of
that'd be fun.
Texas, Illinois, Kansas, like
with Packard apparel on. Or?
Most were Packer apparel. Illinois was a mix. Some were Packers. Some were. Then I had one Minnesota Vikings fan came up in a Vikings sweatshirt. There was a Browns fan there. I saw a guy walking around in a Browns jersey. It's funny going to these games and seeing the people like who are fans of rivals is one thing. Like I can see Minnesota, Detroit, but yeah, why is a Browns fan walking around?
At that point, just don't wear any NFL gear. Well, it's just a very unique
thing. It's funny you say this, Matt, because on the sports radio, my employees give me crap because I listen to AM radio all the time. But on radio yesterday, this point exactly came up. And someone said that because Lambeau is such a bucket list thing, and I know it's every stadium, right? You see that everywhere. But it's almost like I'm coming to support your economy,
which
and
is
all
cool.
That.
Yeah. Which thank
but
you.
I'm
yes.
a fan.
Yeah, that's
of,
good.
But I'm a fan of the Browns, apparently.
And the Browns don't play. They play us every. It'd be every 3 years.
We
at
should play them next now.
Are you right? Yeah.
Yeah, we go to Cleveland.
Go there. Yeah.
But anyway, Atlanta, that was the theory. Was they're just coming to support the economy and it's see your stadium and blah blah blah. But they're a.
Right, they're going to wear their fan colors.
Yeah, they're a whatever fan.
But yeah, it's just kind of funny to see that kind of stuff. But
you will be happy to know, Matt, though, at 4 minutes, Wayne had already thrown the dagger.
Well, I was there for the dagger throw. I was actually walking back to the locker room to...
you got to go to the locker
room. You got to...
No, the volunteer locker room.
No, it's still a locker room in Lambeau, man.
It is, yes.
You were there.
Actually, I got there because you got to get there early enough. The cool thing is I got to see the Commanders arrive, like the buses are coming in, and I was actually on the upper concourse right above where they drive into the stadium, so I got to kind of watch
South end, right?
Yeah, the south end, yep. So that was kind of cool, but yeah, it was a good experience for a good cause, so.
Did you have to wear a vest?
Nope, they gave me a windbreaker and a hat. You had to wear a hat.
Well, I think most people... think you work for the Packers at that
it's all Lambeau, but like they give everybody Lambeau gear
You're somehow you're just a paid employee that these tips go to this organization.
This was my first time, but if your organization had like for Boy Scouts and that kind of stuff, from what I gathered, if your organization has their own hat, like if you have like you can wear that I believe. Okay. You just have to have a hat on, but they'll give you like the Lambeau hat.
Sure.
So and then I return everything on the way out then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, it was good. I'd do it again.
Do you get to watch any of the game from there? Like,
there's a screen, like, right next to our kiosk, but you're not, they tell you you're not supposed to watch the game.
But you could at least keep track.
Yeah,
you know,
keep track of the score. Well, that injury in the second quarter was like...
Where the guy got rolled off.
It was like a second halftime almost because people came out to buy stuff.
I believe that. That was a while even.
Yeah, because he was down for a while. Yeah.
Even the commercial, I think they went.
And then they came back and he was still
down. And then he went back again.
In the cart.
But. All right. Enough Packer talk. Let's get into topic talk. So harvest starting to roll. Seeing choppers more. We're seeing moistures starting to drop a little bit more. We're supposed to get some heat this weekend that maybe will push
next week's the week.
Those stubborn higher moisture fields a little bit. But as we're I know this year's not done yet. We got a long harvest season to go yet. It's never too early to start thinking about next year and to think about nutrient removal. So when you're thinking about fertilizer, if you know, who knows what commodity prices are going to do this winter into next year. Who knows what fertilizer prices are going to do. Things can change a lot. So it's always good to keep track of what are you taking off the field. So when it comes next year, if you have to make decisions regarding how you're going to adjust those nutrient levels in your fields, you should know what you're taking out and what's there. So just wanted to talk a little bit about nutrient removal. It's probably, for some people, old hat. Others maybe don't even think about this number. Maybe they just get it from their, you know, their crop advisor or a program or whatever. But
I do think nutrient removal is a very good thing to kind of have, even if you have a cheat sheet somewhere in your phone or have an app that you like to use, or like we use the UW-A2809, kind of has the removal rates, and they're not that tricky. Like, basically, it's always just a factor.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
That times a yield, you know, to get you that total number. But it is helpful to kind of put that into consideration. Probably to me, the hardest math is like that'll give you then a units, and then to convert it to like
pounds of fertilizer,
potash, or right, yeah, or MAP
translated
or,
to.
So the numbers that you're given here, Matt, aren't pounds of fertilizer. It's
nope, this is
of
pounds of actual
units of the
phosphorus and potassium are the two that.
Would you guys agree? And I mean, very general. In general, easy math, you could like double it for pounds of fertilizer, I mean, for
especially potash. It's 60%.
Right.
So
I mean, in general, I mean,
yeah,
it's not exactly, but
right, depending which phosphorus product you're using, that gets a little bit more
correct.
But they're different. But
just, I'm just clear saying easy math, and then it is always crazy of like, obviously, you better yields, you're going to have more removal, and
right,
and then one
and more residue,
right, right. And then one thing to think is grain versus stover. There's just a big, you know, you're pulling, say, your wheat straw or pulling your corn plant or even baled corn stalks. You know, guys that do that, this yep, is something to always consider.
It always blows me away when I do these numbers that people, when we talk about it, people are actually surprised when you talk about potash that soybeans actually take more than corn.
Yeah,
right.
Corn yep, grain, soybean grain takes more than corn grain.
Yep.
So that, just a side note there, that just don't forget about that, you know, when we're dealing with soybeans. And I know we'll get there, man.
Well, yeah, I've got some numbers to share.
Jumping the gun.
But I looked kind of around the Midwest here, so I looked at Wisconsin numbers, Illinois, and Michigan, just to kind of see, and they're very close. I mean, there's a little bit of nuance and change from one state to another, but they're all relatively similar numbers. I mean, they're not, it's not like it's going to get you an extra 100 pounds of fertilizer somewhere. So just wanted to,
What did you see about the different? I mean, was it
depends,
like a tenth or a couple hundredths here and there?
Yeah, it'd be like a couple hundredths on the decimal ones.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was not a real vast difference. I think it just comes down to maybe soil type. It might be some of it when they did their numbers. Maybe it's...
But one thing to consider is these are all averages. All averages.
Right, they're averages. Right.
So, like, yeah, like Illinois does a good job. They show it's 2,335 samples, and then, you know, it's a range, and we'll get into the, you know, of it's a range, and they're just picking the average or the mean. So, which makes sense. You may have a little bit more, you may have a little bit less, but it still wasn't, though, like the top end was like triple of normal, or it's not, you know, it's just a couple.
Yeah, you're not going to have a vast difference there. So I just wanted to kind of, for my own curiosity, see what that looked like. And then I ran the numbers using the Wisconsin numbers on some different crops. So I started with corn silage because that's our most current harvest item. And so I just did three kind of yield ranges for each crop that I ran the numbers on. And it's not to say that you couldn't have somewhere in between these, but it'll give you a rough idea. So for starters, 15-ton corn silage, you're going to remove about 54 pounds of phosphorus and 125 pounds of potassium. So remember, silage is whole plant, so you're you're going to have more nutrient in that because you're taking more of the plant out of the field. Just like Todd mentioned, you know, if you bale your corn stalks, you have to account for not only the stalks, but also the grain side there. So this is taking everything but the little stub. For 20-ton corn silage, then you would go to 72 pounds of phosphorus or 166 pounds of potassium. So basically, for every 5 tons, we jumped about 20 pounds of phosphorus removed. So you can figure it at about, it's not quite 4, but 4 pounds roughly. And then, yeah, 25-ton silage would get you 90 pounds of P removal, 208 pounds of potassium. So the equivalent of the 25-ton, as Todd is doing the math here, looks like it'd be about 346 pounds of potash and 176 pounds of MAP removed.
So like I said, very in general, for phosphorus, double it, and potash, it's a little less than double, like
yep.
you said, because it's close. Yeah. But.
So if you did any other, like say you did rye and took that for forage, you'd have to account for those nutrients too. But
that's a good point, Matt, is the especially rye is very nutrient hungry as well for forage.
Right.
And then you kind of double up the forage, we see where that really can drop quickly. So any scenario where there's multiple harvests like that.
Yeah, you're potentially removing a lot of nutrient there because obviously at the 25-ton silage mark, if you're pulling that plus some rye, you're looking at 400 or 500 pounds of potash, a couple hundred pounds of MAP. So it's significant. Now we move into grain. So again, you're not pulling the whole plant, so these numbers are going to look a little bit different. And your equivalents of silage to bushels is going to make a little bit of difference, and that's laid out in the, you know, if you look up the numbers for each state. Wisconsin has silage numbers. Illinois, not quite as readily. But so 150 bushel corn, that's 56 pounds of phosphorus, 43 pounds of potash. So that less potash is, you're not taking as much stalk.
It just goes to show how much, if we're taking silage, how fast we can draw down soil test K levels.
Yep.
And if we're not replacing that with manure or commercial, and it's going to be harder this year to want to replace that much.
Right.
356 pounds of potash is going to be, you know, from what I've been hearing, prices are going up and
they're not looking. They're already high, so yeah. They're just high.
Right. So it just goes to show that how much that grain corn does put back in the soil.
Maybe you had said earlier, Bill, of like how shocked people are how much K to potassium that soybeans removes. I'm always shocked at how much phosphorus grain corn removes.
Right.
That the numbers are actually quite similar to the silage number.
Well,
They're not
150 bushel corn is probably closer to like 20 ton silage
correct
than it is 15. So
it's just a very large jump from the potassium and not as large of a jump
correct
phosphorus. So so you're right, Matt, that I'm not using apples to apples exactly there. But one thing currently, phosphorus is very expensive.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's very expensive, and what's a phosphorus hog is grain corn because it versus soybeans. So just something to consider. And what is everybody shooting for? You know, 200 plus bushel. So
right. So yeah, your 200 bushel, you're looking at 76 pounds of P, 58 pounds of K, and 250, if you're hitting that mark, you're at 95 pounds of P removed, 73 pounds of K. So that'd be equivalent to 182 pounds of MAP, so actually pretty close to 25-ton silage, even though it's not a true equivalent there, and 121 pounds of potash. So
it kind of goes to show that there's a little higher percentage of phosphorus in that grain.
Right. Correct.
Right? Because we're taking more out. You know, we're going 250 bushel corn. Your replacement is more on the phosphorus side.
Yeah, in a nutrient concentration level, think of that as like you do have more phosphorus in the grain, but you have a lot more potassium in the stover.
Yeah. So the difference with the silage being you're taking the potassium out of the stalk and the grain versus just the grain side. All right, if you roll into soybeans then, I started at 50 bushel soybeans. There you're at 40 pounds of P, 70 pounds of K. If you jump up to 55 pounds, or 55 bushels, sorry, of beans, 44 pounds, 77 of P, 77 of K, and then 60 bushel, 48 pounds P, 80 pounds K. So they're, every 5 bushels is like 4 units of phosphorus, or phosphorus. And that would run you into a 92-pound application of MAP and 140 pounds of potash. And that's just the grain side. Now, if you remove the straw, too, then you have to account for about 5.4... Get my southern
accent. Down south?
I guess.
Start over. Start over.
5.4 pounds of P and 19 pounds of K per ton. So you have, you'd have to track back how many bales per acre, weight of the bales, figure out tons. So that's in addition to the grain that you took off. So if you're leaving the straw, you don't have to account for that. And the same goes with, I think Todd mentioned earlier, wheat straw. If you're doing wheat and you're taking the straw, you always have to account for pulling that plant matter off the field as well. And then lastly, even though we're close to done, or maybe got maybe one more cut for some guys, but a lot of hay came off right before silage starting here. For alfalfa, that you're looking at 13 pounds of P and 60 pounds of K per ton. So let's say your season was 4 dry matter tons. Again, that's dry matter tons, not wet tons, of alfalfa harvested. You're looking at 52 pounds of P, 240 pounds of K. And so here's where you really get the potash pull. That'd be 100 pounds of MAP and 400 pounds of potash to make up for 4 dry matter tons.
I, you kind of said, Matt, this is the end of the season to maybe not worry, but I think this is actually a perfect time to consider, because you know what your yields were now.
You know what the removal was.
Right. So you can back figure and go, did we...
Not saying it's a bad time, just we don't think about it all.
Correct. And this is, yeah, so I'd say this is a good time to back figure, like, did we hit 6-ton dry matter or something crazy, or was it really low where we only had 3-ton dry matter and we're good, or are we at, you know, the 4 or 5 and kind of what we applied and where our soil test levels, we were good, kind of just reassess.
Well, and go back to your spreading records. You probably, if you were fertilizing your alfalfa, you did it first and third crop.
Traditionally,
how much did you put out there versus what you were taking off, and then you can adjust for next year.
Yeah. Adjust right now. And the other good part with right now, I do think after third crop is maybe a little better for winterization, but you know,
yeah, you could still apply
it. I mean, last night I still saw, granted, it was a Menards commercial, but it was about for like winterizing your lawn. You know, like this is still a good time to throw a little potash out there if you know you didn't add enough nutrient, and it will help over winter. So some guys will say, well, is this a good time? And this is, now is as good time as any, and should help next year in first cutting.
I don't think farmers are going to be able to save big money, though.
I don't.
No. Maybe shave big monkeys.
It'd be nice if they could get a 5. Well, 11%? Is the Menards? Yeah, 11%. It's kind of like your co-op.
That's your patronage.
Your patronage. It's your Menards patronage.
I don't think it's 11%.
No, I don't think it is either. But yeah, bottom line, keep track of what you're pulling off. That's why knowing your yield is important. It's not necessarily the only factor you should consider when you're making these decisions, but it tells you how much you pulled out of the soil. And, you know, if you just want to put back what you removed, in some of these cases, you know, 400 pounds of potash is still, that's a significant amount.
But one really bottom line consideration when crop prices are low and fertilizer prices are high, removal, like still soil tests, and that's a very good guide because you want to put that money towards your low soil tests. But if you have high soil tests, you can maybe use removal as more of a trigger here to know how much to apply. So,
and you're getting right into my last point.
All right.
Which was soil test.
Yes.
Make sure you keep up with those. And yeah, as Todd was saying, fertilize accordingly, depending on your input cost, profitability. Your soil test will let you know if you can get away with less fertilizer. And, you know, looking at removal too. Most people are probably going to have a pretty good corn year this year. And beans have been looking pretty good too. You know, your removal chances are going to be pretty good this year. But if by some chance you're in a sandy knoll that dried up real bad and that field didn't do as well, then you don't have to fertilize as much because your removal wasn't as much. So,
think about the low cost of soil tests compared to high price of fertilizer. You can do a lot with that soil test that really doesn't cost you that much per acre compared to what fertilizer is looking at doing here.
Yep, the trends of the soil test help you recognize too. If you haven't been doing enough to cover your removal, you'll see it in those soil tests year after year. So, all right, that'll do it for our nutrient talk. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So AgWeb had 5 yield-saving combine adjustments for a touch-and-go fall harvest. So with disease pressure and moisture variability, maybe you'll see some tricky conditions out there in the field. So some ideas on what you can maybe lean into as far as adjustments to help save what yield you have. The number one was your rotor cylinder speed. Many fields will require a reduction in combine rotor speed to minimize harvest loss. Moisture swings within individual fields mean varying kernel test weights, and higher moisture kernels that are soft might be prone to cracking. Your concave setting. So this is, I should have prefaced this with who is talking about this, and this comes from a gentleman named Doug Hauser, who is an Iowa State Extension Specialist. His second one is concave settings, so it might be prudent to set your concaves a little wider than normal because soft, high-moisture kernels will often crack more easily than the more narrow concave spacings. Fan settings, be very diligent about making adjustments. Lighter test weight will want to float backward. You might want to visually inspect the rear of the combine, make sure you're not throwing money out the back end, or kernels in this case. Your sieve and chafer, start with a wider sieve opening and adjust down from there. The higher the moisture, disease-ridden corn leaves have a tendency to gum up and plug the sieve. And finally, ground speed. And this is something I think a lot of people talk about with when it comes to combining, and not everybody loves to hear this, but slow down. Slow speeds help reduce losses.
No.
Southern rust.
We don't want to slow down, Matt.
And other foliar corn diseases often lead to weak stalks, which can increase the possibility of lodging. So it means you're probably going to have to go slower. So just some things to think about as we move into that part of the season. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. Since we're talking nutrients, and part of nutrients is soil testing, I thought we'd talk about the history of the Bray P soil test. So the Bray P1 soil test was developed at the University of Illinois in 1945 by Dr. R.H. Bray and L.T. Kurtz, using a dilute hydrochloric acid and ammonium fluoride solution to extract plant-available phosphorus from soils with a neutral or acidic pH less than 7. The Bray P test became a widely used method for estimating the amount of phosphorus available for crop uptake, particularly in the north-central region of the United States, and serves as the primary test for regulatory agents in states like Wisconsin. The Bray P1 test was first published in 1945 by Roger H. Bray and L.T. Kurtz in the Journal of Soil Science after developing it at, as I mentioned before, the University of Illinois. So we use the Bray P. Other states use Malic. So there is a lively debate to be had about the pros and cons of both. But as was mentioned here, it is the regulatory requirement here in Wisconsin for nutrient management. So that is what we deal with, and I think there's a handful of other states that use Bray as well.
Yeah, there's some. Whatever happened to Kurtz? Poor guy, later in the alphabetical. So, because some of the early stuff call it the Bray Kurtz P1 test, and then
Then Bray
we just cut off cut Kurtz. Yep. Yeah,
you just got seeing later to seeing both names.
Maybe when Heart of Darkness came out and Colonel Kurtz, that right. We're like, oh, that guy sounds like a real. We don't want to have that name associated with anything. So I don't remember what year Heart of Darkness came out, but I just had to read it in high school. And there you go, Mr. Sweat.
Yeah.
Using my knowledge of books you taught me. But yeah, so Bray P1 is the phosphorus test used here in Wisconsin, and so all your soil test results, if you're a farmer here in the state, are using that particular extraction.
All right, thank you, Matt, and thank you to our listeners. We appreciate all of you. Please, farmer listeners, tell a farmer friend about our podcast. That's all we ask. It's real simple. All you need to do is search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts or on your Android phone, download an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll move into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. All right, our Cool Beans this week is an update to the MAHA, or Make America Healthy Again report, prioritizes nutrition. While there are concerns remaining about crop protection availability, most groups that had questions do feel like their concerns were heard. So, Executive Director of the Modern Ag Alliance says the second report from the MAHA Commission focused on nutrition, but while uncertainty remains, Elizabeth Burns Thompson said the concerns of America's farmers and ranchers were heard. So there's recognition that the U.S. is the gold standard when it comes to review and scientific due diligence behind the products that farmers depend on, she said. There are certainly some spaces where there are still questions that have been raised that need to be answered, but if you're interested in hearing more from Elizabeth Burns Thompson, we did have her as a guest on the podcast a couple months ago, I think it was. So
yeah, it was in June.
June, yeah.
She was talking Roundup, yeah.
So she says she looked forward to working with the Trump administration to create better policies aimed at helping farmers and create more robust food supply in the future. So it's good to know that they're listening and input is being heeded. So that's always a positive thing. Now we move into our That's Corny this week. So China stepped in for pork, but skipped the soybeans again. So while China did buy some U.S. pork last week, USDA says Beijing purchased nearly half the total for pork, but overall U.S. sales during the week ending of September 4th were below average following reductions by several other key customers. The move to buy U.S. pork could be connected to China raising tariffs on pork imports from the European Union as part of a larger trade dispute. China also bought some cotton while avoiding U.S. soybeans once again and aggressively sourcing supply from Brazil. So new crop soybean and corn export sales were hitting multi-week lows. So unfortunately, that's not what we want to hear, but there's still time. They could still buy some soybeans late in the game here, but so far they have just been kind of letting things sit. So that's beanie. Doesn't really have that's as beanie. Good a ring.
I like
it's,
that.
It's corny.
That's beanie.
But
it's cheesy. Right.
Cheesy. There you go. Well, now we'll wrap things up with a Feel Good Friday, as World Dairy Expo is coming up soon. They're going to have some dairy product winners that were named for the Dairy Products Contest. That has hundreds of products entered in 96 different classes. The winners will be honored during World Dairy Expo. Cheese and Butter Grand Champion is Lake Country Dairy Schumann Cheese from Turtle Lake, Wisconsin, for their vanilla mascarpone cheese. The Grade A Champion is Cabot Creamery Cooperative from Waitsville, Vermont, for their triple cream vanilla Greek yogurt. Ice Cream Grand Champion is Kirshner's Super Premium Ice Cream from Chautauqua, Wisconsin, for their peanut butter chocolate ice cream. Sounds good to me.
Awesome.
And the Wisconsin producers won 36 and finished in the top three in 57 of the 96 product classes. Contested is hosted by the Wisconsin Dairy Products Association, and World Dairy Expo will run from September 30th until October 3rd at the Alliant Energy Center here in Madison, Wisconsin. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about nutrient removal and how to consider that when looking at fertilization for upcoming crops. In our spotlight, we looked at 5 yield-saving combine adjustments that might help harvest this fall. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of the Bray P soil test. Cool Beans this week was the MAHA report was updated, and concerns about the initial report have been somewhat addressed. There are still questions. Our That's Corny is China skipped the beans once again in their purchases from U.S. exports. And our Feel Good Friday World Dairy Expo product winners named, a lot of them right here from in Wisconsin. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.